are speaking of is not outside, and therefore it is not an object of the senses. Nor can the mind conceive the being which is of this nature, because the function of the mind is principally a synthesis of the perceptions of the senses, an organization of these sensations and perceptions. It introduces a kind of coordination and method into the chaotic mass of sensations and perceptions come to us. But the mind does not qualitatively alter the into the mass of sensations. So we are not in any way better by employing the mind or the intellect as a means of cognition or perception. So what the mind does and what the intellect does is merely a corroboration and a confirmation of what the senses tell us. And if the senses are of no use, the mind also is of no use. The only importance that we can attach to the functions of the mind is that it has a peculiar capacity to reflect an inferential presence of a higher reality due to the fact that it is less distracted than the senses, and it has an integrating power which is absent in the senses on account of their isolated activities. Now the mind which is endowed with this special sense, which is ordinarily not visible in the senses, has to be employed for the purpose of entering into an insight of reality by means of a guidance received from a superior. To which subject Uddalaka the sage reverts by means of an example, an illustration. Take for instance, there was a person who has been waylaid by robbers and he has been blindfolded, caught hold of by the thieves, dragged into a wilderness and thrown into the pit somewhere in an unknown place. He has been taken away into a long distance away from his house. He does not know where he has been taken because he has been blindfolded. His eyes are covered by a patch of cloth. He only knows that he has lost his vision and is in a state of despair. The only thing that he can do under that condition is to cry for help. His intellect will not help him there, his mind will not help him, his senses have failed him completely. So, under those conditions, the only help should be from another who has sight. This person has lost his sight because his hands and feet are tied and the eyes also are patched up with a thick layer of cloth, and he has been cast into the wilderness. A person with eyes who can see the way can come and guide and help. And there is no other way conceivable here. Everyone has lost the sight of reality. Everyone has been blindfolded. Everyone sees nothing but darkness. And there is sorrow as a consequence thereof. What is the way out? यथा सौम्यग पुरुषम गांधारेभ्य अभिनाधक्षमानी यतम ततः अतिजने विसृजेत स यथा तत्र प्रांग्वा उदंग्वा अधरांग्वा प्रत्यंग्वा प्रद्मयीत अभिनद्धाक्षम आनीता अभिनद्धाक्षो विसृष्टः। समवन वास लिविंग इन ए कंट्री कॉल्ड गांधारा and he was attacked by robbers on the way. He was tied up his eyes and his limbs and was taken to a long, long distance and left in a thick forest infested with tigers, wild beasts, etc. The person was crying, "I have lost my way. I do not know where I am. Will anybody come and help me? Does anybody hear my voice? Is there anyone near me?" That was all he could do. Then there was some good Samaritan passing by that way, and he untied all the knots with which the person was bound. He removed the bandage from the eyes and told him, "Oh, you have come to this place. Where are you coming from?" "I am coming from Gandhara." "Where is it? I do not know. Which is the way to that place?" Then this gentleman, the kind one, says, "You proceed from this place in that direction, and then you will see something there. Then you turn to another direction, then move a long distance, some distance he will mention, then you will see something else, some place, some village, some person, some indication was given, and likewise you will reach your place." Tasya yatha abhinahanam प्रमुच्य प्रब्रूयाद एताम दिशं गंधारा एताम दिशं प्रजेता स ग्रामाद ग्रामं पृच्छन् पंडिता मेधावी गांधारा ने उपसमन्ति एवमेव इह आचार्यवान पुरुषो वेद तस्य तावदेव चिरं यावन्न विमोक्षी अथ संपत्सि। दिस इज एन एनालॉजी to describe the condition of people in this world. We have been exiled from our homes and cast into the wilderness by the robbers of senses. And we cannot see things properly. We do not know from where we have come. We have lost our way. And the apparatus of our senses are not going to help us. The mind has been confounded. The only way is to ask for help. And just as a person with sight could help the person without sight and could point out the way to the destination which he was to reach, so is the blindfolded individual in this wilderness of life. To take the guidance of a person with eyesight, who can visualize the presence of the great reality which is the destination of everyone, and such a person with eyes to see the truth as things are, he is called an acharya. He is the preceptor. He is the guru. There is no way of escape from this muddle of life except through the guidance of a preceptor. Because a preceptor or a guru is one who has undergone these experiences of life. He has seen the tortures of existence and the sufferings and the winding paths and the abysmal drains through which one has to go. And one knows from where one has come and how one can revert to that place again. Then, through the indications given by the master, the disciple has to proceed gradually. Just as the friend told the blindfolded man how he could move back to his house gradually by winding paths with the help of those signposts mentioned by the good gentleman, so are the scriptures signposts on the way. The instructions of the Guru are indications on the path. We are told that from this predicament in which you are now, the next step would be like this. Naturally, you cannot reach your destination at one stroke. It is perhaps several miles away, hundreds of miles far. So, you go 3 miles from here, and you will find a road that diverts itself to the right. You go along that. Then you will find a huge banyan tree there. Then from there, you turn to the left. Then you go another 10 miles along the same path. You will find a village there. Then you take rest. And from there, you move towards the western direction. And so on and so forth was the kind of instruction given by this gentleman. Thus are we instructed by the master. We have fallen from the ancient pristine existence by a tortuous process of descent. It is not a sudden drop, as if drops of water from the sky fall on the earth. There is a winding process through various kinds of knots. Consciousness has got twisted itself and come to this present condition of earth consciousness, body consciousness, object consciousness, and a total absence of universal consciousness. To go back to that original state, it is not enough if we merely take a jet and fly straight. It is not a straight movement. It is a very winding process. And one cannot see beyond a certain distance. This is the difficulty of the path. You cannot have a set of binoculars and see everything direct till the last point you reach. It is a winding path, and therefore you can see a certain distance, and beyond that there is a blind alley, as they say, and you cannot see anything further. You will see what is beyond only after reaching the spot. So it is pointless on the part of any enthusiastic seeker to know the nature of the absolute at one stroke. He has to move a certain distance. And sometimes these movements also by various types of effort. Sometimes you may have to walk, sometimes you may have to go in a bullock cart, sometimes you may go in a car, sometimes you may fly, well, but everywhere, every kind of vehicle will not be available. So likewise is the method that has to be adopted in the practice of sadhana. The same method will not work always. It is not the same single stereotyped routine that we practice right from the beginning till the end. After a certain point or a certain limit which is reached, the method of sadhana may have to change and the speed may have to be accelerated, etc., etc. And also a different type of guidance may be required. as is the case with ordinary journeys, as is the case with medical treatment, so is the case with education, whether it is secular or spiritual. There are stages of approach, and you will not be told everything at one stroke. And there is also no use saying that, because the mind cannot grasp all these intricacies. So the point is, as the blindfolded man received instruction from the friend, so the blindfolded soul has to receive guidance from a master. And as the person was intent only on reaching home and was not interested merely in sightseeing, otherwise you could go hither and thither and miss the way again, so is the soul to be intent upon its destination and should not waste its time in sightseeing in this world. The master will tell you this is the way, but on the way you will see many things, but you should not be interested in those things. They are experiences through which one has to pass. Just as when you go to Delhi, you will see many towns on the way, but you are not interested in those towns. Your interest is in the destination. Notwithstanding the fact that you pass through various towns, cities, villages and halting places, they give you no respite because your mind is not there. So is the case with the ascent of the soul to the Supreme Being. Many experiences have to be passed through and you will have many visions, many things which will be more wonderful than the things that we see in this world. But that is not our interest, because they are halting places. They are passing phenomena. And as is the case with this blindfolded man who was intent only on rushing back home and not seeing places on the way, so should be the interest of a spiritual seeker to return to the source by any way whatsoever. And he should only take the help or the aid of these tentative experiences through which he passes, but he should not get engrossed in them or get lodged in the halting places on the way. Thus the soul can reach back to its grand goal, the destination. But what is the way? The way is Acharya, the guru, the teacher, the master, the preceptor. There is no other way. So only a person who has a proper preceptor can realize the truth. No one else can reach this truth by any effort of the mind or the intellect or the senses. No amount of scientific analysis, no amount of study of the scriptures will be of any use. It requires direct guidance from a personally experienced person. Such a person is Acharya, Acharyavan Purusho Veda. A person who has a good Acharya or a preceptor knows what truth is, not others. Tasya Tavade Vachiram. Then you are a blessed person if you have such a guide with you. And you will have to live in this world only as long as this body lasts. Afterwards, you will have no bondage. Tavadeva chiram yavanna vimokshate. As long as you are tied up to this bodily individuality due to the prarabdha karma which you have to experience thereby, so long is the bondage, so called. The sanchita karmas are destroyed by knowledge. The agami karmas do not exist for that person. But the prarabdha karma continues. The prarabdha is a name that we give to those cumulative effects of action which have given rise to this physical body, this individuality of ours, through which we have to pass our life here and undergo experiences of various types. And when we are in a position to complete this course of training through this body, then we are about to enter the borderland of freedom. You have to be bound to this world, to this life, only as long as this body is there. The moment this body is cast off, you are free. Because there is nothing else to bind you. All your karmas have been destroyed by meditation. And what actions you perform in this life, they are not going to bind you. Because they are not selfish actions. They are not motivated by bodily individuality. They are propelled by knowledge of a higher truth. And therefore, the actions of the present life after the rise of knowledge called agami karmas will not bind. Nor are they going to be influenced by the sanchita karmas or the resources of past actions. They too have been burnt up by knowledge. The only thing that remains is prarabdha. When that is gone, every type of bondage is gone. Tavadeva chiram yavanna vimochate athasampatsyate. Then you attain to the great being. This being is the truth of all things. Saya esha anima एतदात्मविदं सर्वं तत्सत्यं स आत्मा तत्त्वमसि श्वेतकेतो इति भूय एव मा भगवान् विज्ञापयेत्ति तथा सौम्येति होवाच. श्वेतकेतु, यू अंडरस्टैंड व्हाट आई एम टेलिंग यू. दिस ग्रेट सुप्रीम रियलिटी इज हिडन विद इन यू. इट इज योर गोल एंड यू आर दैट. एक्सप्लेन टू मी फर्दर मास्टर, सेज द बॉय. Now, what is the difference between a person who has consciously attained to realization and unconsciously thrown into it as in sleep? Why does not one attain realization after death? If the casting off of the body is the only criterion of liberation. The Upanishad here tells us, when you cast off the body, you attain liberation. But why should not everyone attain liberation if the body alone is the bondage? There is a difference between one with knowledge and one without knowledge, notwithstanding the fact that both of these persons cast off their bodies one day or the other. And both the one who has attained to knowledge and the one who is in sleep have thrown into the body of reality somehow. What is the difference? This again is explained by another example. This section is full of analogies. Purusham somya uta उपतापिनं ज्ञातयः पर्युपासते ज्ञानासि मां जानासि मां इति तस्य यावन्न वाङ् मनसि सम्पद्यते मनः प्राणे प्राणस्तेजसि तेजः परस्यां देवतायां तावत् जानाति. When a person is very sick and is about to depart from this world, people sit round him. His relatives squat around him and ask him, do you recognize us? That person who is about to pass away, he is put this question, do you know who I am sitting here? If the senses are active, naturally he would recognize the people around him. But if the senses have been withdrawn into the mind, then he can think, but he cannot speak. He cannot even see. He can only have memory of his relations. But he cannot see them squatted or seated in front of him. What happens at the time of death is that there is a gradual withdrawal of the functions of the system. The physical senses are activated by certain forces which impel us towards perception. When the purpose of bodily existence in this world is finished, then there is no work for the senses. The senses act in a particular manner on account of a function that they are expected to execute in this span of life. When that prarabdha is over, this body is of no use for purpose of experience here. Then the senses understand that they cannot do anything through this body. They want to drop this instrument. So they withdraw themselves. Then the physical body cannot anymore become a location of these functions of the senses. What are these senses? They are the energies propelled by the mind. It is the mind itself projecting its tentacles through the orifices of the body called the organs or the senses. So when the function of an individual through a particular body is over by the exhaustion of a prarabdha karma, the senses are withdrawn into the mind. Then the dying person can think but cannot see. He cannot speak. No organ will function. He will be almost practically dead. He will be lying on his bed without life as it were, yet life is there, he can think. But as long as the mind is not withdrawn into a higher purpose or higher reality in him, he can think. Otherwise, even thinking will not be possible. So at the last moment, when a person is just about to pass away, even thinking stops. Not only speech and senses stop their activities, even the mind stops its functions and he cannot think. If you speak to that person, he will not reply. He will not react. He will not give even an indication that he has heard your sound. That is the condition where not only the senses are withdrawn into the mind, but the mind is withdrawn into the prana. There is only breathing, not thinking or sensing. Then you will say, the person is still alive. He breathes. They sometimes bring cotton and keep it near the nostrils to see if he is alive. If the cotton moves, it means he is alive. Otherwise, he is gone. So, the first stage of withdrawal is the absorption of the senses into the mind. The second stage of withdrawal is the absorption of the mind into the prana, wherein the breathing process continues, life exists, but there is no thinking and there is no sensation. Then what happens? The breath also gets withdrawn into the fire principle, which is what you call the heat in the system. As long as there is heat in the system, you say there is an element of life. If the heat also has gone, the whole body has become cold, limbs are chill, then you lose all hope. It is finished. Prana is also withdrawn into the fire principle. Vang manas sampadyate manah prane pranaste jasi. So when the mind is gone, the prana is there. When the prana is gone, mere heat is there. That is the last point which is a person being on the verge of leaving this world and entering the other world. When the heat also is withdrawn by the Supreme Being, Tejasi, Tejaha Parasyam Devatayam, then there is no consciousness and there is no body. No. Individual life gets extinguished by a gradual process of absorption of the external functions into the internal ones, until they are withdrawn finally into the general reality of all things. a person enters into a state of deep sleep. He does not know what has happened to him. So one cannot know that one is dying. There is unconsciousness. There is a sudden shift of emphasis from one level of being to another. Just as you cannot know that you have fallen asleep. However much you may be trying your best to keep a watch on the process of going to sleep, you will not know it. You are suddenly in it, that's all. Either you are not sleeping or you are sleeping. You cannot be just midway between the two. So likewise, a person, when he enters into this generality of being where he becomes totally unconscious, he has lost contact with this world of externality. This happens at the time of the withdrawal of the individual soul into the Supreme Soul in the process of liberation, and also at the time of death. So, from the point of view of the external occurrences of the various phenomena of withdrawal, death and liberation are identical. What happens to a person when dying happens also to a person during liberation. But there is a great difference. The difference is obvious, which needs no explanation. A person is not cast into wilderness or thrown into an oblivion when he enters the higher stages of conscious expansion. There is an unconscious and compulsive pushing back of the functions into their sources at the time of death. In death, there is no transcendence. There is only automatic withdrawal. But in the process of self-realization, there is a transcendence so that there is no coming back. When you have outgrown a particular level of experience, you do not come back. But you have been forced to wrench yourself from a particular experience. The desire for that experience still lingers, and you will have to come back to it to complete your experience. Yada asya vang manasi sampadyate manah prane pranas tejasi tejah parasyam devatayam athana janati. Then he knows nothing because he entered the being of all beings, though unconsciously. This being consciously realized in the experience we call God realization or self realization. And this being into which one is cast unconsciously at the time of death and sleep, this is the ultimate reality. This is the essence and this is the self of all. And thou art that, Shweta Ketu. Saya esha anima etadatma vidam sarvam tat satyam sa atma tatvamasi Shweta Ketu iti bhuya eva ma bhagavan vijnapayatu iti tatha somyeti ho vacha. My dear father, explain further. Now the teaching is about to conclude with one example. In ancient times, there was a system of finding out who is a thief. The method was to catch hold of all the suspected ones and bring them to the court of the king. And under the order of the king, a heated axe will be brought, and they will be asked to touch the heated axe. The principle is that a culprit will be burned by touching the heated axe, and one who is exonerated and he is not at all at fault, even when he touches the heated axe, it won't burn him. So there is a similarity of touching in either case, but there is a dissimilarity of being burnt or not burnt This is an example that Shveta Ketu is told by Father Uddalaka to make a distinction between the realized soul and the unrealized soul. Purusham somya uta hasta grihitam anayanti apaharshit stejamakarshit parashumasmai tapata. The servants of the king catch hold of people and say, here is the culprit, here is the thief, here is the robber. Hit the axe for him. Sayadi tasya karta bhavati tataha eva anratamatmanam gurute saha anrata abhisandha anrate anratena atmana antardhaya parashum taptam pradigrinati sadhakyate athahanyate. Atha yadi tasya karta na bhavati तत एव सत्यमात्मानं गुरुते स सत्यस्याभिसन्दः सत्येनात्मानं अन्तर्धाय परशुं तप्तं प्रति गृह्णाति स न दह्यते अथ उच्यते. इफ अ पर्सन हैज टोल्ड अ लाइ एंड वाज आस्क्ड टू टच द हीटेड एक्स, नेचुरली द फॉल्ट विल बी मेड विजिबल आउटसाइड बाय द बर्निंग ऑफ द हैंड due to the touch of the heated axe. And then he is punished for his consequences, for the actions. But if a person has not committed any fault and he was only suspected and brought to the court, then when he touches the axe, he is not burned. Then he is liberated. So is the case with the soul that is really bound or not bound. Being in the body or not being in the body is not the criterion. Just as touching the axe is common to both the suspected one and the guilty one, but the consequences are different, so is the case with people who have knowledge and no knowledge. In spite of the fact that both are in the body, and both pass through the same stages of ascent, from the grosser to the subtle, from the external functions getting absorbed into the internal ones. The realized soul may be in the body, as long as the prarabdha continues. Just as a bound soul is in the body. But the difference is that the bodily presence or existence does not affect the mind of the liberated soul. That condition in which the soul resides in the body with knowledge is called Jivan Mukti. Liberation while living in life. The body is there, but it does not affect the consciousness. The mind has the power to bear the pains brought about by the existence of the body. The exhilarations coming through the contact of the body with the objects of sense, or the pains coming due to contrary contacts of the body, do not either affect the soul that is liberated. There are some teachers who give other examples, like a dry coconut inside a shell, they say. The coconut that is raw sticks to the shell, and that is the condition of the bound soul, they say. Consciousness sticks to the shell. But the liberated soul is inside the body, no doubt, but he is not sticking to the body. As the dry coconut is not touching, it makes a sound inside if you shake it. It is detached from the shell, though it is inside. So likewise is this consciousness in the body. It is there tentatively, but it is not confined to the body, though it is inside the body. And also, in spite of the fact the senses are withdrawn into the mind is withdrawn into the pranas are withdrawn into the fire or heat in the system, which again is withdrawn into the Supreme Being. In either case, in one case it is a gradual transcendence and a conscious process of ascent. You know what is happening. When you consciously move in a particular direction towards a destination, you know what is happening, where you are moving to, and what are the stages you have crossed, what is the distance still ahead, etc., etc. When you know the distance that has to be covered, you are not fatigued on the way, because you know how much you have covered. You are fully conscious of every stage of the travel or the journey. But suppose you do not know what the distance is, how much you have covered, how much is left, and whether the direction is correctly taken or not, and also you are blindfolded, then you know the suffering. This is the difference between a liberated one while living in the body and the one that is unliberated but caught in the body. This is also the difference between self-transcendence and the compulsive withdrawal of the senses. This is the difference between death and self-realization. This is also the difference between sleep and self-realization. The desires of the mind are not destroyed in sleep. Therefore, there is return after sleep. The desires of the mind are not destroyed even in death. There is a return to reincarnation after death. But the desires of the mind are destroyed in self-realization. Therefore, there is no return. The cause of the birth of a body in the process of reincarnation is the presence of a desire for a particular experience. The karmas we refer to as panchita karmas are the groups of actions or reservoirs of potencies of actions which emerge out one day or the other as a plant emerges from a seed. The seed may be lying in a dry area or a field waiting for the time of the rain and suitable conditions or circumstances to sprout up. So are the sanchita karmas. They are like seeds lying in an arid soil. The conditions suitable for the sprouting have not come, because the prarabdha karma prevents the manifestation of other karmas. The pressure of the prarabdha, which is under the process of experience, does not allow the sprouting up of other karmas because of the weight of this particular one. And so they lie in ambush waiting for an opportunity. Now the prarabdha is over, which means to say that experiences which one has to undergo through this body are exhausted. Then there is death. Then the next karma comes up. That is the conditioning factor of the new birth. What one will become in the next life, in reincarnation, will depend upon the nature of the next strong karma or important karma lying in ambush in the reservoir of sanchitas. These are difficult things to understand because one cannot know which karma comes up for action. Whether one action gives rise to one birth, or two, three actions joined together to give a birth, or many of them joined together, whether the karmas of this birth give rise to the next birth, or the karmas of some previous birth come into action, activity, and give birth to the next birth, all this cannot be understood by anyone who is not omniscient. The death is nothing but the exhaustion of a particular allotted portion of karma and not the entire karma. But the sanchita is destroyed by the fire of knowledge in the case of a person who is attained self-realization. So there is no rebirth. Thus, the distinction is drawn between a person who is to ascend to reality consciously by self-transcendence and the other one who is merely to die for the sake of another birth. This is, in essence, the teaching of Uddalaka to Shweta Ketu. First he began by giving an explanation of the process of creation, how the objective universe is created from the Supreme Being, the Sat, by means of the triplicated elements of fire, water and earth, how everything in the world, in all creation, is constituted of these three elements only in spite of the variety of particulars. And he then explained that inside the body also these very same principles work. What the world is made of outside, that this body also is made of. The mind and the prana are also influenced tremendously by the activity of these three elements, fire, water and earth, so that the external universe as well as the individual within are both constituted of the same elements. Essentially they are indistinguishable. This one being is present both outwardly in the universe and also inwardly in the individual. This being is the goal of the realization of all individuals. And that being is present subtly in every particular manifestation. It is invisible to the eyes because it is the subject of all knowledge. It is pervasive principle. It is the subtlest essence. It is the background of all existence. And therefore the senses and the mind cannot recognize it or perceive it. Ordinary knowledge is inadequate here. It can be known only through the grace of a guru or a master and guidance of a teacher. And even when you live in the world, this body, as other people live in this body, you draw a distinction between your way of living and conducting yourself and the ordinary people's life in the world. For all practical outward purposes, the liberated man and the bound man look alike. You cannot know who is a Jivanmukta and who is a bound one. They speak in the same way, eat in the same way, live in the same way. But the distinction is within, that one knows what one is, whereas in other case one does not know what one is. So here is the distinction between knowledge and ignorance, and this is also the explanation of the path to liberation as propounded by Sri Uddalaka. Hari Om Tat Sat.